Well, brothers and sisters, I would first like to extend greetings from your brothers and sisters from the community in Jerusalem. Arab believers, Jewish believers, and Gentile believers, we all say shalom from Jerusalem to let you know that we are well, the church is growing, God is moving, and we are all safe. Thank you very much for your prayers, and I'll take back a blessing to them in a month. We are in the fourth Sunday in Easter, and Easter is a season, yes? It's not a day. For us, Easter is a season. It goes from Good Sunday, the Resurrection Sunday, through to Pentecost. And this Sunday, the fourth Sunday, it's always a tradition for us to celebrate and talk about the Good Shepherd. This is a part of our lectionary, the lectionary that we inherit. This sort of idea of a lectionary reading is something we inherit from the synagogue. This is something that Jesus was familiar with. At the time of Jesus, they read the Bible in 3 years. 2,000 years later, we're still doing it. Seemed to be good for him, so it's good for us. And we had to wrestle with all of these texts. And even though we're in lectionary C, which is normally when we're reading Luke, they throw in John all over the place. And so today, we have the Good Shepherd motif. And Easter's a fantastic season because it always points to the resurrection. Yes? He is risen.
He is risen.
Hallelujah. Yes. But the resurrection isn't just an event. It's a person. And we get to meet and experience that person. And what the good news is that the Messiah rose from the dead. There's the gospel in one sentence. We have four books, which we call the gospels, yes. But the gospel, the good news, is that the Messiah rose from the dead. And if he rose from the dead, what does that mean is going to happen to you? Same thing. And that is indeed good news. So in our text this morning, we read that Jesus is in Jerusalem. John very deliberately puts this story in its context. And we are at the Feast of Dedication. What is the Feast of Dedication, I hear you ask? I got a suspicion you're going to ask me a lot of questions today. It's Hanukkah. Everybody knows what Hanukkah is? That's the time we all get to eat donuts. And for a brief moment in time, they have no calories. But it's an 8-day festival, which we inherit from the Jewish people, from the Maccabees, which is actually in the Anglican canon. Well, not canon, but reading cycle. It's a holiday that celebrates the redemption that the Jewish people experienced from the Greeks. The Greek Empire had taken over the Middle East, and the Jewish people were under intense persecution to renounce their faith, to engage in idolatry, to stop circumcising their children, to burn the Torah. They decided, no, we're not going to do that, and there was a revolution. It was militant, and it was successful. And there was a family of heroes called the Maccabees. Their names were Simon, John, Lazarus, and Matthew. You know all these names because the idea of redemption, of freedom, of restoring the house of God, of hearing again the truth of the Bible that had been forbidden us, that Hanukkah came with strong messianic qualities. And even though the Maccabees didn't succeed, they ended up going bad. Unfortunately, most of our governments do that. Theirs did. The idea of messianism in there was still there. So by the time of Jesus, everybody was calling their kids after the Maccabees. So you get to the disciples of Jesus, and what are their names? John, Simon, Matthew, Lazarus. Even Jesus, Yeshua in Hebrew, God saves, developed in the Maccabean period, that God was going to be the Redeemer. And so it became quite a common name, and Jesus has it too. He's in this messianic time, which according to the book of Maccabees, they celebrated the dedication of the temple on the 25th of Kislev. What is the month of Kislev, I hear you ask? It's a very good question. In our calendar, it's December. 25th of December. Ooh. Why do we have something special happening on that day? It's got nothing to do with paganism. One of the things that I hope, if there's anything you're going to remember from today, apart from my accent, is that Wikipedia needs to be taken with a grain of salt, especially with the word delete. What you read on the internet most often is unfortunately not true. The truth is, it's right here. And the truth sets us free. So Jesus is at a very special time, very messianic time in the Jewish calendar, and he's in the temple, where Jesus likes to hang out. He's not afraid of the temple. He's not scared of the temple, even though it might be a corrupt institution by this time. It's still his Father's house, is it not? And he likes to be there ever since he was a small child. And in Jewish tradition, the temple mountain, that special mountain of the house, that special place of God and his dealing with the world, is a connecting point between heaven and earth. See, when God made the world, he made things in couples. Those couples were always in a relationship. He made heaven and earth, day and night, good and evil, male and female. Now we're in relationship. And so heaven and earth had these special points where they connected most strongly. In the Bible, you end up with places like Beit El, the house of God, where there was a ladder that connected heaven and earth that Jacob could actually see. Fire would come down from heaven on the Temple Mountain and eat up the offering. The presence of the Lord actually lived on that mountain for nearly 400 years, which is a mind-boggling thought even to think about. According to the Bible, coming out of the Garden of Eden in the book of Genesis is a river called the Gihon. Who's been to Jerusalem? Did anyone go to Hezekiah's tunnel and walk under? Yes. What's the name of that river that comes out from that spring? The Gihon. So if the Gihon came out of the Garden of Eden, where's the Garden of Eden? It's the Temple Mountain. I know you all think it's in Iraq, but that's because you've been watching Wikipedia again. Okay, remember, delete. The Temple Mountain. Where would God build his temple? Where would God finish the history of the world? It ends up being in the same spot where he dealt with man in the first place. Beginnings and ends always occur in the same place according to Jewish tradition. And you see it in the Bible very clearly. It's a Jewish text after all. It's the Garden of Eden. When God dealt with Adam, all the words that he used to describe to Adam how to tend the garden are the same words he used to the priests, how they would tend his temple. So the first priest was a Gentile. Now, isn't that interesting? It was Adam. And God would come and dwell with him in the afternoon, which is an interesting concept. So here again, John, the writer John, is being very specific. He puts this event in a messianic time at a very special place where heaven and earth connect. And the current leaders of that place, the current leaders of the temple, were who? They were the Sadducees. Now we read in the text, it says, the Jews came and talked to him. And your first question should be, oh yeah, who were the Jews? Because they're all Jews. I mean, Jesus is Jewish. The disciples are Jewish. Everybody who's visiting the temple, they're Jewish. The guards are Jewish. And the leadership are Jewish. So which Jews are we talking about, John? In context, he's talking about the Jewish leadership, the Sadducees. The Sadducees were part of this elite family group which denied the resurrection. They were corrupt. They had pretty much twisted the truth. They were holding the truth away from the people. They were bad shepherds. And Jesus, when he gets challenged by them, they come to him and they say, now come on, Jesus, tell us plainly, are you or are you not the Messiah? Jesus says, I've been talking to you plainly. I've already told you I'm the Messiah. Now, when we read our Bible, we go, oh yeah, when did you do that? because I actually didn't have a piece of my Bible that said, Jesus walked into a room and said, hello, I'm the Messiah. He did. But he did it in very Jewish ways. Now, because of the Maccabean period, we had 150 years of messianic expectation, and people had all kinds of ideas of what the Messiah would be. Will the Redeemer be a conquering king? Will he be like Judah Maccabee? Will he be like Simon? Will he be like Eliezer or Lazarus? Will he be poor and humble and riding on a donkey? Or will he be rich? One of the different ideas of the Messiah, he was going to be filthy, stinking rich. He was going to buy us out of our trouble. And they're still trying to do that, are they not? There's all different types of messiahs. So if Jesus walked in and said, I'm the Messiah, which one does he mean? If I walked into this church and I stood up here and I said, hello, I'm a Jehovah's Witness, what would you do? I know what Rob would do. Okay. First of all, he would hold me down and Sharon would baptize me, okay, with this glass of water. Okay, let's get that boy saved. But I could argue with you. I could say, excuse me, I am a witness. I am one of Christ's ambassadors. I am a witness of the living God, Yahweh, Jehovah. I am one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and I would be correct. Would I not? Yes. Unfortunately, there's another group of people called the Jehovah's Witnesses. So if I say that, you will think I'm one of them. So Jesus has the same problem. If Jesus walks in and says, I'm the Messiah, then they go, cool, the one I'm thinking about is the rich one. Hi, nice to meet you, Yeshua. I'd really like a loan. I want to pay off these Romans. Or I'm thinking of the conquering king. Let's start the revolution, Jesus. We'll get some swords. We'll go storm the city. We'll take the people. We'll join us in an uprising. The Romans are gone. We've started the kingdom of Israel. Or the poor Jesus, let's sell everything. Let's make sure that anything we've actually got, we sell and we give it away till we've got absolutely nothing, and that will bring on the redemption. But Jesus says, actually, I'm not that type. This is the type I am. He actually does say he's the Messiah, and he does it in very Jewish ways. And he actually tells us he's the Messiah the very first sermon he has. It's in Luke chapter 4. We all know a very familiar story. Jesus has been pushed into the desert by the Spirit of God. He has overcome the devil. He has overcome his bodily need for food. He has had a very hard time, but now he comes back out of the desert and he goes straight to his hometown, goes back to family, goes back to his kin, and his job. He's actually a lay reader in the synagogue. So he stands up to read, and the scroll that they had given him that day was the scroll of the prophet Isaiah. He notes that it's actually in Isaiah 61, and he begins to say, and he says in Hebrew, because in the ancient world, you didn't read the Bible. Why didn't you read the Bible? You didn't have one. Okay, they just didn't have enough copies. No one had their personal text. And so Bibles were read and owned by a community. The community read the Bible and they did it together. So you didn't read the Bible, you heard the Bible. You heard the words. That's why Paul says faith comes by hearing. Yep. You hear that Jesus is the Messiah more than you actually read it. So Jesus reads and people hear. And he says in Hebrew, when he reads Isaiah, he says, Ruach Adonai alai. The Spirit of God, or the breath of God, is on me. And then he uses this word called ya'an, which we translate as because, although the word for because in Hebrew is ki. Ki sounds very different to ya'an. Ya'an doesn't actually have a meaning. It's an idiom. It's a grammatical way of saying, sit up, pay attention, because the very next sentence is horribly important. Wouldn't that look good if they translated it that way in the Bible? You actually say it in modern Hebrew now. Like if I was getting to the point of this sermon and I really wanted you to know, I would say, Yan! And everyone's like, oh, okay, here it comes. Right? And then you would get the one message. And so what Jesus does, he says, Ruach Adonai alai, the Spirit of God is on me, Yan! And everyone's like, oh, okay. He says, Adonai mashach oti. The Lord, literally, the Lord has made me the Messiah. Now, to anoint is the verb lamashiach, which means to make a Messiah. You make Messiahs. You anoint them. It's the same word. And so Jesus says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. Pay attention. The Lord has made me the Messiah. He then sits down. Everyone looks at him. And he says, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. So Jesus did say he was the Messiah. So you can read in John chapter 10, he says, I've been talking to you plainly. I don't know how plain I need to say it. I am the Messiah, but you're not listening. Even all the good things that I did, and I told you what I was going to do. I'm going to open the eyes of the blind. I did it. You saw it. I'm going to preach the good news to the poor. You saw that too. You saw the lame walk. You saw me fight every demon that I saw. I never left any of them alone. The blind see, the lame walk, the brokenhearted have been bound up. Good news is preached to the poor, and the captives are being set free. And you haven't even believed that either, which is an interesting thought, that even people who see miracles don't believe. And that happens to us. Sometimes we challenge each other, or people challenge us, and they say, well, if God would just do something, I'd believe in him. No, you probably wouldn't. What you really want to do is hear the voice of God. You really do. Because Jesus says, the sheep hear my voice. And he begins to use the shepherd motif, which in Jewish tradition, everyone knows what that means. In antiquity, in the beginning of Genesis, shepherds were the kings. They were the leaders of households. They were the rich ones. They were the defenders of the weak. Abraham's a shepherd. Isaac's a shepherd. Jacob's a shepherd. Esau's a shepherd. Ishmael's a shepherd. They're all shepherds. Moses becomes a shepherd. And the good shepherds were the ones who actually cared for their flock. As we read in the Psalms, the ones who actually took their flocks to the water, who protected their little ones during the harsh sun, who found the food for them and defended them from the wild bears and the beasts. And then their flocks grew and they flourished and they multiplied. And they said, oh, I like this shepherd. I'm going to follow him. They knew who their shepherds were. The shepherds would talk to their sheep. They'll get familiar with their voice. Funny thing about sheep, are there any farmers here? Sheep aren't as dumb as we think they are. They can actually remember. They might not have the biggest brains on the planet, but they can remember. They will remember your face. They'll remember your voice. Unfortunately, when they're left to their own devices, they're a little dumb. We see in the shepherd motif in ancient tradition of the good shepherd who goes off to find the lost sheep. Originally, before that was attributed to Jesus, it was attributed to Moses. Anyone seen the movie Prince of Egypt? Yep, that's where Moses, now described as Val Kilmer, goes looking for his lost sheep. And when he finds the lost sheep, that's when God ignites the burning bush. Because God at any time could have talked to Moses. But he doesn't. Because who is Moses? Moses is a very interesting character. He's rich, but he was powerful. But then he became a murderer. Yes? And then he got caught and he became a coward. And then he ran away. And you go, oh, that's a really good hero type. Murdering coward. Yep. You should lead the people. I vote for you. Yeah. But God says, when is my hero ready? When am I going to be able to talk? When is he actually going to be able to hear my voice? Well, when he looks like me. And then when the one sheep gets lost, and Moses goes and searches, then God says, ah, my hero is ready. And you have compassion on the lost sheep, so I'm coming to talk with you. And Moses was also ready to hear the voice of God. And there's lots of voices in this world. They're all incredibly distracting. Most of them are not true. The voices we hear are the voices of our culture, that are trying to tell us what type of identity we should have, or what we should wear, what type of cars we should drive, what sort of jobs we should have, where we should drink our coffee. Voices that tell us how we should save the planet or not save the planet. Most of these voices are open lies. Some of them have some half-truths in them, but none of them come from heaven. The voice that you want to hear is the voice of Jesus. It's just the one voice, but it's powerful. And he speaks. And he says, my sheep, they hear my voice. And when you have the word hear in Hebrew, the word is shma. Shma does mean listen. It does. It's actually in its imperative form, which means listen. It is also the Hebrew word for obey. When you read the Bible, there is no word in the Bible for obey. The word is shma. If you heard God say, Aaron, turn right, what would I do? You would hope I would turn right. Because if I turn left, most likely it won't go as well as if I turned right. So hearing and obeying are actually the same word. And so Jesus says, the sheep hear my voice and they follow me. Follow in Hebrew doesn't mean just walk behind the guy. Follow means look like him, act like him, talk like him, behave like him. Everything from dress like him and eat like him. In the ancient world, a disciple didn't just show up for a two-hour Bible study and leave. A disciple lived with their master every day. They watched what they did when they got up for breakfast. They watched how they related to women. They watched how they related to the temple. They watched how they read the Bible. They watched how they prayed. And then they put it into practice and they looked. So after 3 years, how many Jesuses did Jesus have? 12. 120. He had lots of people looking just like me. That's why we're called Christians. What does that word actually mean? It actually literally means messiahs. How many messiahs are in this room? Hopefully, y'all are. You got to act and look like Jesus so that we call ourselves Christians. We're Christ's, little messiahs. We hope to. The great thing we get to do is we get to do it together. So when I make a mistake, you come and correct me. When you make a mistake, I get to do the same. And we get to do this journey together. It's a great journey. We do it initially by listening to the Lord. We listen to his voice. His voice will give us our true identity, the true identity in the risen Messiah. His voice will tell us how to behave in this world, what's good, what's appropriate, what's a poor decision, what's a good decision. We get to do these things and find these things out together. The good shepherd is the one that guards us. He protects us from the enemy and he resurrects us on the last day, which is a beautiful thought. And the good shepherd gives us something that nothing else in this world can give us. All the other voices cannot give you one word. They cannot give you hope. There is no other hope. We can do our best to save the planet, and the sun will still eventually burn out and die. We can do our best to fix the economy, but eventually even that paper money goes away. We can do our best to bring peace on the world, and we should. But the true voice, the true hope that sets differences aside is in Jesus. And I got to tell you, we see it in the Middle East all the time. You can come to Jerusalem, you can come to Christchurch, and you will find Arabs and Jews worshiping together. The TV ain't going to look for it. They're not going to find it, but it is there. Arabs and Jews together, Gentiles, brothers and sisters, worshiping the Lord, praying together. You will hear stories of God speaking to Muslims in dreams, of people coming to faith. And the number of believers continues to grow because you and I, brothers and sisters, have the best story in the world. You and I have the Good Shepherd. You and I have the hope of the nations. You and I have a king that never dies. You and I have a king who's alive. And he speaks. And when we hear his voice, what are we going to do? Obey it. We're going to put it into practice. And lo, he will be with us until the end of the age. That also is a very good thought. Amen.